Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Discover a healthcare team that's always here for you at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Email todaycb@rte.ie.
Plenty of messages coming in. I'll just give you a flavour of them. I'm a young landlord, 46. I'm planning to sell off my two properties as soon as my current tenants move on. The rent controls are the main problem. My costs are going up much faster than the rent. The continuously changing regulation is also a serious pain. Experts are not understanding why we are leaving the market. 51551 for your messages. Now, though, the British Prime Minister Rishi Sunak has confirmed Tory MPs will be given a free vote on any punishment for Boris Johnson if the Privileges Committee rules against him in its Partygate probe. The Prime Minister was speaking on BBC Breakfast this morning. He said that such a matter is for individuals rather than for government. The former Prime Minister Boris Johnson yesterday submitted a legal dossier to the committee and he is expected to appear before them tomorrow. There's a 5-hour slot lined up for his evidence. With more on this, I'm joined on the line by Gerry Scott, who is a political reporter with the London Times. Good morning, Gerry.
Good morning.
So this seems to be an issue that Rishi Sunak would rather not deal with, but it is certainly dominating news coverage in the British press and media today.
Yeah, absolutely. And you can imagine that Rishi Sunak might be sitting in number 10 rolling his eyes at a week when, you know, he's progressing his migration policy, where there's that key vote on the Stormont Brake, part of his Windsor framework in the Commons. And yet again, we're all talking about his predecessor, Boris Johnson. But it is a big week. It is a big day. Boris Johnson has submitted his dossier that he thinks will clear his name to the Privileges Committee, and that hasn't been published yet, but is due to be. And the basis of that is that he will say he was advised by officials that this is all within the rules and guidance. What is quite interesting this morning is that some of those in Whitehall are pushing back and saying, no, we advised on the rules, not the guidance, and we also advised on specific instances, not any gatherings as a general kind of umbrella catch-all. So I'm sure that will all play out in the session tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. And as I said, it's going to be 5 hours. That's what has been earmarked for him to take questions. Is he the only witness that the committee has called to be questioned in public?
So for the moment, yes, but this is a public kind of, you know, hearing. So we've seen evidence published. They've already published a report. Now, what's very interesting is that Boris Johnson is going to be allowed to have his legal team in the room, led by the well-known lawyer with the ironic name Lord Panic. And even though he won't be able to be kind of represented by him, he will be able to have notes passed to him at various points. What is fascinating about all this is there is no kind of debate about whether rules were broken, and that's because Boris Johnson was fined for at least one gathering. It's all about what he either knew or should have known when he made statements to the Commons and whether he should have corrected those.
Yeah, that's interesting though, isn't it, that his allies are using the fact that the Labour Party chair of the committee, Harriet Harman, said the fact that he accepted the fixed penalty she equates that to him being guilty of misleading the House of Commons. Now, his allies have said, look, we have a problem here with the impartiality of the chair for that reason.
Yeah, which is quite ridiculous, really, because they chose her. You know, it has to be a Labour chair of this committee. And what the Labour Party did is they went to the government and they said, who do you want? And that is because Chris Bryant, who is officially the chair of this committee, had been very outspoken about his opinions on Boris Johnson. And he kind of stepped aside and said, you know, I don't feel like I can be an objective chair. Harriet Harman is such a well-respected politician. I don't think anyone can really say that she wouldn't be impartial. In fact, number 10 has pretty stridently rebuffed that as well and said, you know, the House has chosen to go ahead with this. The House has chosen this committee. It's a committee, a cross-party committee, and that they have faith in it. So you're right, it is Boris Johnson allies, but the Conservative Party, the Conservative government, seems to have no track with that argument.
So what would happen then if the committee decides that he did mislead Parliament? What's the likely outcome for him in that case?
It's kind of a whole smorgasbord of the options that they have in front of them. If he is found to have misled the House, it could be anything from simply having to go to the Commons and apologise if they decide that that is a minor enough breach to write up to being suspended from the house. And if he's suspended for a certain amount of time, that could trigger a recall petition in his constituency. It all gets a bit technical and in the weeds, but you have to have 10% of his constituents calling for it, and then that could trigger a by-election. So at the very extreme end of the scale, it could be the end of Boris Johnson being an MP. But then, like I say, at the less extreme end, you do have simply an apology to the House. There isn't too much indication about what the committee is minded to do yet. They've been very tight-lipped and kind of, you know, keeping their own counsel on what they think about this. So it's a bit of a wait and see.
The other big story dominating the headlines where you are is the details of this really damning report about the Met Police, Gerry. And we're going to be talking about it in more detail in the next hour. But it contains some really shocking accounts of what's been going on in that police force.
It does. It's really sobering reading, actually. And I think that some of it is what was already known or suspected about the Met, but the top lines are, you know, that Baroness Casey has found that the Met Police has lost the public faith. She says, you know, it shouldn't be down to the public to protect themselves against the police. It should be the police protecting the public against crime and criminals. But what she has found is there is systematic and fundamental issues, including institutional racism, misogyny, sexism, homophobia. And some of the particular examples are really shocking, including fridges breaking down and losing evidence from rape cases, so them having to be called off, a Sikh officer's beard being cut, bacon being put in the boots of a Muslim officer. I mean, it's really, really shocking stuff. Mm-hmm. And really the kicker is that the Met has been warned about this multiple times and hasn't done anything about it.
And as I say, in the next hour, we're going to return to that story. We'll be speaking to the former Scotland Yard detective, Peter Blexley. Gerry, the DUP and at least one Tory backbencher have come out now and said they're going to vote against a key aspect of the Brexit deal, the Windsor framework. They're voting against the storm and break when it's put to a vote in Parliament this week. So what's the feeling around this? What's the reaction been to that revelation that it will be voted against by the DUP and at least one Tory?
I think it is, perhaps gone down in Westminster, somewhat of a surprise in some quarters, because I think there is kind of a wide acceptance, even from the DUP themselves, it must be said, that there has been significant progress made with the new Windsor framework, and especially that storm on break. They've obviously decided that it isn't enough for them. Their argument is that Brussels will still have an overall veto, and that it doesn't really solve the issues that they have. Now, practically, it's not really going to make much of a difference. The majority of Conservative MPs will back it. Labour have told the Conservative government that they will back it as well. So it will sail through the Commons. But I think more kind of philosophically, if you will, it shows that there are still ruptures over this, including within the Conservative Party. The ERG, that European Research Group of Brexiteers, aligns themselves with the DUP and basically follows where they go on this. But they are somewhat diminished in their power from the Brexit Wars days where we saw all those votes. They're not as powerful as they were. In part because many of them have gone into government and they're ministers now, so have to take the government line. So they'll cause some noise, but not too much trouble, I imagine.
Gerry Scott, thank you very much for joining us this morning. And I want to talk a little bit more now about that issue because, as I said, the DUP confirmed that they're going to vote against the storm and break in Westminster. I'm joined now by Deirdre Heenan, Professor of Social Policy at Ulster University. Good morning, Deirdre.
Good morning, Claire.
Thank you for joining us. So when we first heard about this storm and break, many people saw it as a potential unionist veto. There were question marks over how it might work. How surprising is it then that the DUP is going to vote against that aspect of the Windsor framework in Westminster?
Well, I don't think it is surprising. It has been very contentious, and the DUP are claiming that it doesn't address the democratic deficit. But I think more importantly, they are claiming that it has been oversold or missold by the UK government and are pointing the finger at the Secretary of State in particular. Last week, Chris Heaton-Harris, in an interview, said that if 30 MLAs in the North triggered this storm and break, then the UK government would be bound to act. That sounds very much like a veto. But actually, when we looked at the detail, it becomes clear that the power ultimately lies with the UK government. So they can decide whether or not this triggering meets what their criterion are. And in a sense, what became clear in lateral days is that the power does not lie with the Northern Ireland Assembly. The power will lie with the UK government, and that is really what the DUP are upset by. Mm-hmm. They thought they would have a veto. They do not have a veto. But I suppose it raises the question, is it realistic that these 25 MLAs or 30 in order to pull this Stormont break could have a veto over the whole of the European Union? Doesn't really sound realistic to me.
And the vote then today is on just the Stormont break element of the Windsor framework, but not the Windsor framework as a whole. Why is that?
Well, at the start, we were told that we would have our say, and the government were repeatedly asked, would there be a vote? In the end, we were told there would be a vote. Now it appears there will be a vote. And I think this came somewhat left field. The DUP seemed to be somewhat surprised by it, because at the outset, Sunak said he would give them time and space, and they didn't feel to be under any pressure. Then it was announced that there would be a vote tomorrow on this particular aspect of the Windsor framework, the Stormont break. But for many people, this is just a proxy vote on the whole framework, because it appears that we're not going to have a whole vote. And so there is some confusion around, is this the only vote? It isn't quite clear. What is clear is the DUP have said they will vote against it. The other political parties aren't quite sure, because they also have problems with it. They're saying it's causing confusion. It could be vexatiously used. And in the end, would some foreign direct investment want to come to Northern Ireland if they weren't sure, really, that there was stability, that there was still this idea that the government could fall at any time? So their argument is, rather than increasing certainty, it is actually increased instability.
I see the Ulster Unionist Party leader Doug Beattie is saying that the break offers Northern Ireland politicians a unique say in EU laws, but important points of legal and technical clarification still remain outstanding. So he's saying, look, Stormont needs to come back. The Stormont Assembly needs to come back to move all of this forward. So we know what he's looking for. What's the DUP looking for?
Well, that's the question. We're not quite sure what the DUP are looking for, because yesterday their conversations, the criterion that they have set, they're almost impossible to meet. And now it seems they're moving away beyond these seven tests. So they had the seven tests. They said quite at an early stage that this Windsor framework didn't meet their seven tests. Now it seems that these seven tests aren't enough. So, for example, they're saying not only do they want to veto EU laws coming into the North, they also want to have some veto on UK laws, which seems quite incredible. So the irony, of course, is the Stormont break cannot be triggered unless Stormont is fully up and functioning. So it is a cat and mouse situation. I think from the outset, it was fairly clear to me that the DUP would play for time, that the idea of St. Patrick's Day or this visit to Washington or indeed the anniversary of the Good Friday Agreement would be a timetable that they would be ruled by. I think for them, the issue is the May elections. They have to go into these local government elections looking as if they have held the line, that they will not have Jim Allister breathing down their necks. And I think that's exactly what they're doing. Mm-hmm. Now, can they U-turn after May and suddenly say, well, now we think we will restore the devolved institutions? Well, we've been here before. The DUP never supported the Good Friday Agreement and yet worked all of its institutions. So could they see themselves finding themselves in a position at the end of May saying, well, we don't support this Windsor framework, we are against it, but we're going to go into the devolved institutions and see can we have this twin-track approach? Yes, it's possible. The big question is, how did the DUP get from where they are today to where they want to be? And how long will it take? Meanwhile, of course, in Northern Ireland, whilst we are treading water, we are moving backwards. We're moving backwards in our public services. We're hearing on a daily basis about the pressure that our services are under. But in the end, the DUP will take their time. They're not coming under enough pressure to say, OK, this is what we're going to do. And we're all left sitting on our hands waiting. I mean, I think it's somewhat ironic that we have this eight-person panel and they're supposedly making their decision on the Windsor framework. Mm-hmm. How could they come out and say they support it? when many in the party have already said, well, look, the fundamental part of it, we're voting again.
Yeah, that's the DUP panel, which, as you say, seems a bit pointless now that they've made this decision to vote against the storm and break in Westminster. Deirdre, it's fascinating to talk to you, as always. Thank you very much for your insights on that. Deirdre Heenan, Professor of Social Policy at Ulster University. Coming up next on the programme, are you addicted to helping others? Do you say yes to things when you really want to say no? We're going to hear about people pleasers after this break.
Text 51551 today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.